It's not pink, it's rose, okay? Rejoice, rejoice, rejoice in the Lord always. Today we celebrate the third Sunday of Advent, and the antiphon that we heard sung in Latin that we all understood perfectly said precisely that: rejoice, gaudete in Domino, always. And that's a beautiful thing to start a Mass with. But if we start to think about it, perhaps there's a part of us that says, rejoice always? Always rejoicing? And we can start to say to ourselves, well, what does that mean for us as Christians? Does that mean that we can't experience other emotions? Or that we shouldn't? That we shouldn't ever feel sadness or fear or anxiety? And perhaps a part of us can start to go a little bit further, and we can ask ourselves, is Paul just being one of those toxic optimists? You know, those people that are always super positive about everything, and sometimes you just kind of want to strangle them. It's like, you're being too positive. Like, everything's going to be great. No, I'm going through a really tough time. Is that what this joy means, that we just forget about that? Paul was in a tough spot when he wrote that. He, like John in today's gospel, was in prison. He was writing from a place of trial. And still he could say, rejoice. Have joy. And perhaps it will be helpful to look at it, the different types of joy that are expressed in scriptures and the different types of joy in Latin. And in Latin, we have three different types, three different words that are used for joy. The first one is laetitia, which is the joy we experience superficially, but it's a good joy. The joy we can experience when we go to a wedding, the joy we experience at a baptism, the joy we experience at a Christmas party. Those joys of life and those moments when everything feels like it's going well, it's right. Then there's another type that's called exultatio, which is what Our Lady expressed in the Magnificat, in that moment of ecstasy when she reaches out to the Lord. It's that deep kind of joy that's expressed in something. You feel like lightning going through your body. Perhaps you've experienced it in prayer, in relationship, or some moment of your life when you felt that. And then there's a third kind of joy, gaudium, which is a deep joy. It's a lasting joy. And as Christians, we can say that it's our inheritance through our baptism. It's this deep gladness that's rooted in God's faithfulness. And it's a joy that's compatible with all other human emotions. It's a joy that's compatible with experiencing fear, sadness, anxiety, even disgust or anger. It's our inheritance. And if we hear this word joy, we can think of another person who leapt for joy. And it's beautiful because we see in the gospel today this re-encounter between John and Jesus. When Mary and Elizabeth meet John and Jesus in their mother's wombs, John leaps for joy. What's the word that was used in that moment? Gaudium. That's what John experienced in the womb. And now we see John years later in prison in a really difficult place. And we hear the question that he reaches out to Jesus with through his disciples. And we can almost hear the hesitation, the fear, the anxiety, the wonder, perhaps even the disappointment in his voice as he says to Jesus, are you the one who is to come? Or are we to wait for another? All of the hopes that he had placed on Jesus, the joy that he had placed in him, was this all going to crash down? And we have the beautiful response on the part of Jesus. Jesus is responding with scripture, responding with the promises of his Father. responding with the book of Isaiah. And Jesus, we read a large portion of the book of Isaiah, of chapter 35, and John himself is citing from a little further on. So it's this beautiful dialogue between the Old and the New Testament in John the Baptist and in Jesus. And Jesus saying, I am the fulfillment of this Old Testament. And with that, we can see part of the geography of salvation. That's our own geography. It's a map for us. And throughout salvation history, in the Old Testament, we see it physically, where the chosen people are exiled. First, they're enslaved in Egypt. Then they have to go through a desert. And then they come to the promised land. This book of Isaiah that we just read from is right after or during the return from the Babylonian exile, where the Israelites had been exiled from their country. They were sent to Babylonia, current day Iraq. And they were freed from there, and they were able to go back to the promised land, but they had to cross through a desert to get back to that promised land. And in that, we see ourselves. You know, we live in a world where we can have direct flights. Everyone who's from the Midwest, don't hate me for this. I was born in California, lived in Oregon, and have lived in New York City. So my understanding of the flyover states is very limited. I've been there a few times. I love them. I love the Midwest. It's beautiful. It's amazing. But I do understand how you can, like, want to try and get from one coast to the other and just get there quickly. In the time of the Israelites, there was no way to do that. If you were in exile, you had to go through the desert to get to the promised land. And we oftentimes want to jump that step. Okay, we're in exile. What is the exile? We're all in situations that we didn't choose. There are people in our lives that have made choices that have perhaps made our lives difficult. There's choices that our parents made, that people around us, that politicians before us, all of the situations that can bring us those moments, oftentimes we find ourselves in situations that we did not choose. And the Israelites were in the same situation. Those who were freed from Egypt were not the ones that were enslaved in Egypt. It was generations later. The ones in Babylon who had been enslaved, when they were released, they weren't the ones who had gone into slavery. They weren't the ones that had chosen against the Lord. But yet they found themselves in a place of exile and had to choose to cross the desert to get back to the promised land. And in this passage of Isaiah, there are three places that are mentioned: Lebanon, Carmel, and Sharon or Sharon. And each of these three places has a tremendous significance. Lebanon was the mountains. It was a place where the cedars of Lebanon, that we oftentimes see referred to in the scriptures. And it wasn't just a cedar. There wasn't just, we love seeing these beautiful trees. There's a hidden meaning in each one of these places. First, Lebanon is a place of the cedars. The cedar wood from Lebanon was what was used to cover the Holy of Holies. It was used on the walls. In the most sacred place, the place where God dwells, was covered with that wood. Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel is a beautiful place by the sea with this beautiful view that we see described in the book of Kings and Elijah. And what grew in that fertile land on those fertile hillsides was wine grapes. There were vineyards that produced wine. And in the plains of Sharon or Sharon, what grew there was wheat. And as Catholics, there should be all of these fireworks going off in our brains as we hear these words. Temple, Holy of Holies, wine, wheat, Eucharist. And the beautiful thing, I missed it the first couple of times I read the reading. God is not promising that once we get to the promised land, we will have all of that. What he's saying is, I will make straight a path in the desert. I will send you the fruits of Lebanon, of Carmel, and of Sharon. I will sustain you. I will be with you in the desert. And that becomes even more a Eucharistic image when we hear of Elijah. Remember Elijah, and he goes out and has this big battle against the prophets of Baal. And it's this moment when we see kind of his triumphalism of God came down, he listened to me, he burnt these sacrifices, the show of God's power. And then he decapitated a bunch of prophets. And then the king said, the queen actually, said, if I don't kill you by the time the day's over, may the same thing happen to me. And Elijah, who had just seen God's power in this extraordinary way, falls into depression. Goes out to the desert. He's crying. He's like, I just need to take a nap. Falls down depressed. And an angel appears to him and gives him bread. And with that bread, he receives the strength to walk 40 days and 40 nights to where? To Carmel, where he's going to encounter God. Not in the power and in the fireworks, but in the small, silent voice at the edge of a cave. So we see him in that place. And these places are an encouragement for us. And they remind us that the only way back is through the desert. And we can think of the desert, and oftentimes we think of the desert as a deserted place. Desert, kind of the name says itself. There's a beautiful place in Chile, the desert, I think it's called Atacama. Look it up in Google afterwards. And it has this desert that's the desert, the flowering desert. And it's a particular place because for 7, 8-year, 10-year stretches, they don't receive any rain at all. And you look out there and it's just dirt and rocks. And that's it. But there's an amazing thing that happens a few hours after a rainfall. As the first drops begin to fall and more rain falls on this desert, there's an explosion of flowers and life and fruitfulness that was hidden just beneath the surface. And all it needed was that water, such a beautiful symbol of grace, to fall on that desert for it to be fruitful, for the hidden life in that desert to come out. And that's the way it is for us as Christians. We walk through the desert of this life. We walk through the challenges. We know that there's a fruitfulness there. That confidence in the fruitfulness and life in the desert is Gaudium. It's the rejoicing we're supposed to have. It's the knowledge that in that desert, the desert that we're all in, coming back from exile, we are going to feel all of the emotions of humanity. Sadness and joy, but also fear, anger, anxiety. We're going to feel them all. But beneath them, there's a certainty that we're going towards the Lord. We're going towards the promised land. And we don't have to wait for that. It's not something that happens at the end of our lives. The joy is for now, because the joy is knowing that everything that's happening to us, everything that's going on in our lives, is bringing us to that place. This Gaudium, this rejoicing, is knowing that we are exactly where we need to be able to take the next step in our journey. And everything that we need for the journey will be given to us. The Lord is with us. And as we prepare for Christmas, we remember that he is the Emmanuel, God with us.